Filipino Filipina American History Month celebration this Thursday, October 30th at Shorecrest High School. The celebration event, numerous things to learn for Shorecrest High School. So ages 1 to 5 are welcome. And that will run from 10 to noon at Spartan. And this is definitely one of the cutest events of the year. So encourage everyone to come on out for that. Also excited to share that we have a new artist at the cottage. We invite you to visit her. From others are welcome to participate. Small nature-inspired drawings that will become part of the growing community installation. And you can visit shorelinewa.gov/art to learn more about our artist in residence program. And also happening this Saturday, November 1st, we are hosting Dia de Muertos celebration at Spartan Recreation Center from 2 to 5 p.m. This is a heart-centered celebration that connects grief, love, and unity through music, community, art, food, storytelling, and more. So encourage everyone to come out on Saturday as well for that. And as council is aware, we are currently constructing 2 roundabouts on either side of the I-5 interchange at 145th Street. To support residents getting more familiar and comfortable with those forthcoming roundabouts, we have a couple more roundabout simulator drop-in sessions scheduled through the end of the year. The next drop-in session will be next week, Monday, November 3rd, before a regular council meeting. So you can join us from 5 to 6:45 p.m. here at City Hall to try the roundabout simulator, and I think it will be out in the lobby. And finally, I have just a couple public meeting reminders to share. The next City Council meeting will take place Monday, November 3rd at 7 p.m. here in the chambers. Planning Commission will meet next Thursday, November 6th, also in the council chambers at 7 p.m. The Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Services/Tree Board's next meeting will be December 4th, 7 p.m. here at City Hall. And for more information about these upcoming meetings, please visit shorelinewa.gov/calendar. And that's all I have, Mayor.
Thank you. Are there any council reports this evening? Councilmember Adamasio.
Thank you, Mayor. I attended the King Conservation District Advisory Committee, known as KCD. Cities can apply to KCD for urban forest health tree canopy assessments. KCD also assists residents with wildfire mitigation, how to prevent wind-driven embers into attics and crawl spaces, where to plant new trees, etc. It may be good to look at this when we're revising tree code and building code. I attended the King County Public Health briefing. Influenza is on the increase now. The vaccines are out, but due to federal funding cuts, the former free vaccine clinics will be severely limited, if not abolished. World Cup FIFA will see an increase in unpermitted food vendors. There was a concern from the health department for foodborne illnesses during this World Cup. County inspectors want to educate vendors to be trained, licensed, which can prevent foodborne illnesses. And lastly, a lot of us right here on the dais took a tour of Camp United We Stand right over here at St. Dunstan's, and it was a phenomenal tour. That's a very good example. People exiting homelessness, living in a well-structured tent encampment. I was very impressed. Thank you.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor Mark.
Thank you. I attended K4C, which is King County Cities for Climate Collaboration. It was an in-person meeting that was hosted by Executive Braddock. And there were various presentations. One of them was concerning electric power and the concern that we don't really have enough electric power here in Washington State to support all the growth. If there is anything that goes wrong, we can be easily over, and the impact that data centers could have on that, and so the concern was raised. There were many other topics discussed there. Community solar was a topic where there was state funding available for some of our fellow King County cities, and I'm very interested in learning there's a possibility here. And so it was very well attended. I also have been involved with, I think I had six meetings associated with regional water quality this week, and we're trying to make progress. Thank you.
Thank you. Couple thank yous. I want to thank Councilmember Robertson for attending the Green Shoreline event with the Master Builders Association, which planted over 60 trees at Paramount School Park this on past Friday. So I appreciate that, especially planting trees in the rain. Really good for the trees, maybe not as good and nice for the people there, but we live in Seattle. Let's see. I want to thank Councilmember Senator Solomon and Representative Davis for coming and attending our annual dinner with them. They had some really good things to say about the upcoming legislative session, and it was really good to break bread with them. And on a personal note, I did last week. I did was in D.C. For the National League of Cities nominating committee, and I will say that the people who were applied to be on the board were really qualified applicants, and the future of NLC is bright. Any other council reports this evening? Okay. Next on the agenda is public comment. This is the portion of the meeting where members of the public may address the City Council on agenda items or any other matter pertaining to city business for 3 minutes or less, depending on the number of people wishing to speak. How many people are signed up tonight?
We have 5 in person and 1 remote.
Okay, so we will have each person will have 3 minutes. So the clerk's going to call your name. Please begin your testimony with your name and city of residence. We're going to go with the people's in person first, and then we'll go to the remote participant.
Okay, so the first 3 are Emily Jones, Kathleen Russell, and Jolene Kemmerling. I'm sorry, Jonelle Kemmerling.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm a little rusty speaking at a whatever this is called, microphone. Forgive me. Hi, my name is Emily Jones. I'm the director of the Shoreline Lake Forest Park Senior Activity Center. And I am here actually to read a letter on behalf of the issue regarding funding minor home repair. So this is directed towards the City of Shoreline and the City Council public comment. I am very disappointed that the Shoreline Council pulled the funds for this valuable program. I used their services for the first time in September for a leaking dishwasher line. I no longer have to crawl under the sink and wrap it with towels. Such a relief. My bathroom sink is clogged. I have tried everything to clear it and also followed YouTube videos. My very old hot water tank is also a problem now. I contacted Minor Home Repair and found out the funds were not approved. My husband passed away in February. Only one Social Security check is coming in now. My son has terminal cancer and is in hospice and moved in with me under the hospice care. We live very frugally, minimum heat, minimum groceries, etc. We have lived in our Shoreline home for 57 years. We have paid the expensive property taxes for 57 years. The minor home repair was my peace of mind through all the other issues I'm facing now. Please reconsider funding this program. I understand housing stability and utility needs, but what about homeowners losing hot water, having to wash up in the kitchen sink because the bathroom one doesn't drain, and no funds for repairs? I listened to the remarks from council. I hope they will consider those in homes that need repairs to be able to get the crucial help they need to stay there. Thank you. And this is from a client of the senior center who is 79 years old. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good evening. Good evening, Council. This evening, Save Shoreline Trees is presenting our tree canopy petition to the Council. We have listened to Council concerns regarding public comments by a limited number of people who speak at Council meetings about our tree canopy. Since May 29th, we have asked residents of Shoreline to sign our tree petition, confirming that while we may appear to be few, in reality, we speak for more than 1,000 and most likely even thousands more residents. Many tree advocates have participated in this process of signature gathering and engaging with the public. We acknowledge the efforts of Tina, Barb, Cindy, Betty Lynn, Laura, Nancy, Michael, Sandra and Brooke, Bob, Sigrid, Janet, Melanie, and Lisa, who gathered signatures at events in Shoreline and additional locations. Appreciation to these tree advocates and all who helped collect signatures. Janelle Kemmerling will now share with you some of the comments heard while gathering signatures.
Thank you. Welcome.
Janelle Kemmerling, resident of Shoreline. Hello, Council. For the past 5 months, supporters of Save Shoreline Trees have been making one-on-one contacts across the city, hearing people's feelings about tree loss, property rights, and livability. We are truly heartened by all the signers' endorsement of this petition. There have been very few refusals to sign it. I thought you might like to hear some examples of comments that we've heard while collecting signatures. Starting with, I love what you're doing. I bicycle through Lake Forest Park frequently, and it's 15 degrees cooler there. Yes, I want to sign that. We all have to breathe. And I can't think of a better petition to sign. We hope all the city departments will take note of the wishes of the people who believe in the value of trees and the benefit from living among them. Thank you for hearing us.
Thank you.
So Bonnie Berry, and then after Bonnie is Sabongal Chatawi.
Welcome.
Bonnie Berry, Shoreline. So in continuation of presenting this petition, here's how the petition to council reads. Quote, to increase the city of Shoreline's existing tree canopy, we support the preservation of existing healthy trees and the equivalent tree canopy replacement for trees cut down on private and public land and in public parks, unquote. We present this petition with the signatures of 1,137 residents and expect the city's comprehensive plan 2044, natural environment goal number 7, will be supported by the tree code update to ensure that the tree code on private property will, quote, maintain and increase the urban canopy to provide wildlife habitat, support community resilience, mitigate urban heat, manage stormwater, conserve energy, protect and improve mental and physical health, and strengthen economic prosperity, unquote. Our remaining mature canopy is precious. Please protect and preserve established trees, especially evergreen and native trees, and replace trees cut down with trees of similar species and equivalent canopy at maturity. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And here is all the signatures.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, council members. My name is Sibongile Chichkiwa. I volunteer and work at the intersection of mental health and arts right here in Shoreline. First off, thank you for your continued leadership and for all the thoughtful work you do, from housing and public safety to parks and community well-being. As someone who supports community-based healing and creative engagement, I've appreciated seeing how the city's 2025 to 2029 strategic plan continues to emphasize on community well-being, not only through behavioral health support, but also through opportunities for connection and creative expression. The Parks Recreation Open Space and Arts Plan reinforces that vision and shows that Shoreline recognizes how the arts contribute to emotional health, social connection, and even safer and more resilient neighborhoods. So thank you for your continued investment in mental health counseling, especially like for the low income older adults. And that kind of targeted support has a real impact. And as we look ahead, expanding mental health resources for youth and families can also build on that same foundation, supporting prevention, reducing stress, and strengthening the fabric of our community. I'm also grateful for the ongoing arts events and culture programming, including the Artists in Residence series, Dia de Los Muertos, I wish I could pronounce that well, and other creative gatherings that bring people together in ways that will foster belonging and pride. Looking forward, I hope Shoreline will continue to champion city-supported events and partnerships that uplift the local artists, youth, faith-based and other groups, and to invest more in spaces where people can express themselves, build relationships and resilience. These gatherings are a form of community care and reduce isolation and promote well-being, which keeps people safe, connected and hopeful. With the 2026 World Cup approaching, Shoreline has an incredible opportunity to showcase the many stories, traditions, and talents through art, food, and music to welcome visitors and reflect who we are. So personally, I would love to see and to support community-led events and partnerships that help residents take part in that global moment right here at home. It's a chance to highlight our creativity, strengthen civic pride, and connect Shoreline to the world stage in an authentic and inclusive way. So let's make Shoreline a place where creativity and care walk hand in hand. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so online we have Katie Laura.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening. Katie Laura, I live in Ridgecrest, and I'm speaking on the proposed legislative priorities, the Shoreline-specific interests. So first, it's great to see the much-needed improvements on 175th at the top of that list, and I'm sure we're going to talk really soon about our favorite critical crosstown multimodal connector. But my actual focus tonight is to speak in support of funding and resources for the activation of what I've heard called the North City Commons, which is the community pop-up retail and placemaking pilot at 185th near Rotary Park. So in one of my day jobs, I work with Main Street America. This is an organization that does economic development strategies in small historic downtowns around the country. And I've learned that one of the guiding principles in this kind of local economic development work is asset-based development. So building on what you have and playing to your community's unique strengths. Shoreline might not have a historic downtown district, but we do have a lot of assets, and I think a lot of them add up to make this project make perfect sense. The site itself, we have it. It's in perfect location, walkable to North City on an important east-west connector. We don't have the capital budget right now to do anything permanent, but with this location comes another asset. We have a built-in base of retail customers. And if there's anything we can learn from our community satisfaction surveys, it's that wanting more small businesses in Shoreline is something nearly everyone can agree on. People just really want to spend their money locally, and they just need more opportunities to do so. There's also alignment with several city goals, new kinds of city events that engage broader communities, making public space investments in neighborhoods like North City that don't have as many parks as other parts of Shoreline, and building things to do close to our transportation hubs. And all of these pieces are really aligned with each other. Last, another like the most important asset, I think, is that people are really, really excited about this idea and are willing to work to make it happen. The North City Neighborhood Association, Urbanist Shoreline, the entire Parks Board, random people who I've talked to who are just really into food trucks. This could become something really big for Shoreline, and a lot of people want part in making it happen. So unequivocal support for prioritizing this project and doing everything we can on the state and city level to make it happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Those are all the people who have signed up to speak tonight. If there's anyone else in the audience who'd like to address the council at this time, please come to the podium. I'm seeing no one go to the podium. The next item is approval of the consent calendar. Is there a motion?
I move approval of the consent calendar.
Second. We will talk to Councilmember Popey about Seconding the consent calendar. Yeah. The consent calendar has been moved and seconded. Will the clerk please conduct a vote?
Mayor Roberts?
Aye.
Councilmember Scully?
Aye.
Councilmember Adamasu?
Aye.
Councilmember Ramsdale?
Aye.
Deputy Mayor Mork?
Aye.
That motion passes 5-0. The next item on the agenda is action on the 2026 Community Development Block Grant Program and reprogramming of prior year's funding. And there is a staff report. Welcome.
Thank you. Jessica thought I could do this by myself, and I actually could figure it out this time. So, we are back. We were here on, almost said August, on October 6th. So again, just a quick recap of what took place on October 6th. There is an estimated $320,000 available in community development block grant funds for 2026. We also have some uncommitted or unprogrammed funding, and again, CDBG funding from 2025, and that total is $50,909. The use of these funds are set by federal requirements, and how those specifically lay out here in our program. We have an interlocal with King County, and basically what that equates to is decision on local funding each year, not including the reprogrammed, is about $153,000. Again, October 6th, we held the required, you held the required public hearing, and after discussion, you requested that staff return with an additional option. So here we are. So again, before we present the options, I just want to briefly review the requirements or the required funding that's parceled out from that $320,000. As established in our interlocal agreement with King County, 25% is spent on a major home repair program that is a loan program that, again, as the loans get repaid, it gets fed back into the, made available for other shoreline homeowners to make major repairs on their homes. 5% to the Housing Stability Project, which is essentially a rent and mortgage assistance program. 12% for King County to administer the program on our behalf and to do all the planning, the reporting to HUD, et cetera. And then the City of Shoreline has 10% to pay for planning administration of these funds. So again, that leads us to a remainder of $153,600 for local programming each year. And I'm bringing this slide forward as there was a discussion on 10-6 regarding looking at CDBG funds as part of our overall human services program funding. And as a reminder, Council approved Human Services Strategic Plan in 2024 and outlined basically three priority areas of basic needs. Services to serve the housing and homelessness and behavioral health. What that equates to through funding that both the council allocates for general fund, some funding we receive from the state that we're required to spend in certain ways, basically all of our contracted funding is about a little over $1 million a year. And of that, about 20%, or $206,000, is provided to agencies that provide direct financial assistance, whether that be rent, utilities, or other needs. And again, that $1 million does not take into account other things that the city does. We have a very robust teen program. We have walking volunteers, lots of different ways that we support the health and behavioral health needs of our citizens. So again, here is the recommendation. This was the original one that was presented on October 6th. So in looking at the $153,000, we are recommending $130,000 for the Minor Home Repair Program and $23,600 to Vital Housing for an Affordable Housing Acquisition Project. For the reprogrammed $50,909, we're recommending $40,000
to be added to the 2025 contract for minor home repair, and then the $10,909 to be added to that 2026 funding for a total of $34,509. This includes generally the same information that I presented 3 weeks ago for the projects that are recommended under option one. But again, just to note, in 2024, minor home repair served 43 households, and then already of July of this year, they have served 49 households, and they are no longer able to assist anyone until there is new funding in place. In terms of the vital housing project, that is acquiring approximately 110 units in two properties, and units will be deed restricted, affordable to 60% AMI for a minimum of 10 years. And use of local funding allows the nonprofit owner to access tax exemption made available under that RCW that's listed there. And really that's what makes not the $34,000 we're recommending, but it really that tax exemption is what makes it work for the nonprofit housing developer to have those units remain affordable. So in terms of some notes regarding our staff recommendation, we feel that this recommendation, again, is still our number one option or number one recommendation. It allows the Minor Home Repair Program to fully restart services in 2025. It establishes what we believe is adequate funding for minor home repair in 2026. It is a relatively low financial contribution for a minimum of 10-year deed-restricted affordable housing project. I believe the total of the purchase of those two would be in the $20 million range. So very small contribution financially in order to get that affordable housing to remain in place. In addition to the CDBG projects, if council still felt very strongly about this option and they still wanted to look at adding more funding for financial assistance, that could be something that the council could ask for during the mid-buy process that's coming up. So in terms of a second option as requested, we would have additional funding compared to what we started with in 2025 for the Minor Home Repair Program. It is not as much, but it would be at $120,000. The affordable housing acquisition would be lowered to $1,600. And in terms of a financial assistance, that would be at the maximum allowed under HUD regulations and our interlocal with King County. That would be $32,000. And then in terms of the reprogrammed dollar amount, it would put $30,000 to the 2025, the current minor home repair program, and $20,909 to the affordable housing acquisition project. So just providing some additional information about the project that was added in terms of financial assistance. So it sort of depends on the agency selected. We did leave it as TBA for now. There are a couple, including HopeLink, that is mentioned in the staff report. That means typically they can provide aid once every 12 months up to $3,000. And that means that it would be able to serve 9 to 10 households with the $32,000. Council could also choose to do this and then also say that it can only be used for rent or mortgage or utility assistance. It's really, we could do that. We could also not limit it and just provide that flexibility for the agency to allocate to residents of Shoreline and in figuring out what they need the most at that time. So option two, this does allow minor home repair to restart services in 2025, but they may not be able to, they may have to shut down again and not fulfill all requests for services this year. It is a limited funding increase for minor home repair in 2026. And based on, again, the huge increase we've seen this year, it may not sustain services for the entire year. And just wanted to note, there are really limited options for local nonprofits to access capital funding. And that's one of the reasons that several years ago, again, we made the recommendation as staff to kind of remove the public services portion, allowable portion from the CDBG funds, because there's not really a lot of other funding involved. Like in terms of minor home repair for Shoreline, we are the only funder of that. So again, that's why they've had to shut down so far this year. And another reason why we recommended a few years ago to get out of the business of using CDBG funds for services funding is they just have a large amount of administratively burdensome requirements, and that makes a lot of sense if you have 100,000 or 200,000 like we did during the pandemic. It makes less sense when you have $32,000 to spend each year. So recommendation, review and discuss the options as presented, discuss any changes that's desired by council, and then the motion is listed on the slide. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there a motion? Deputy Mayor.
I move to adopt the 2026 CDBG funding plan and 2025 CDBG contingency funds as proposed in Attachment A in tonight's staff report and authorize city manager to execute the agreements with applicable agencies for the funded programs.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Deputy Mayor, to your motion.
I thought staff did a great job explaining why this is needed and how the money is used, and I agree with that. Thank you.
Councilmember Onamasu.
Thank you for your phenomenal work and staff. And thank you for adding the 2025 in there for the home repair, because we can't wait till 26. So thank you for that. Hope Link receives $257,000 for the 2 year, and that would include the home services funding plan for people being evicted or facing eviction, things like that. So thank you for broadening the explanation. A lot of us were concerned with, you know, why isn't this funding more people that could be losing their homes rather than fixing a pipe? So thank you for your great explanation comparing option one and two. I do support option one and the one-time 2026 budget amendment to fund the local agencies that provide the rent mortgage assistance that would prevent eviction or losing their home. I will be supporting option one. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Ramsdale.
Thank you, Mayor. I will not be supporting option one. I for a number of reasons, I did a little more digging, you know, regarding, well, first of all, I want to say one thing. The need for services in our community far outstrips our ability to meet those needs financially. I totally understand that. And I'm glad to see, I'd like option two more because it does still preserve the minor home program. I did a little digging. I kind of talked to some of the folks over at HopeLink to kind of find out what the status of their programs are, and found out that like the money, the $25,000 that we provided to HopeLink for energy assistance for the whole year, normally lasts the whole year. Well, it ended in June, so they ran out of money for energy assistance in June. They also ran out of money for financial assistance, and so financial assistance, that their financial assistance program, they used to be able last year. They were helping. Let me see here. They were helping about 14 to 15 people a month under that financial program for rental assistance, and now it's down to 4 to 5 a month, and they're on a lottery system right now, so they're only able to help because of the help of that financial assistance program provides about like 90% of it is for facility assistance. I think some of the figure that you had in the staff report that stated it was could serve 9 to 10 people, I think it's a little inaccurate. The average amount spent, according to the manager of the grant and funding program for HopeLink, so the average cost per person was $1,212 last year of the money that they provided per person. So they estimate like the $32,000 would provide a larger number than the 9 to 10. It would more like 12 to 15, not 9 or 10. So not a tremendous amount of money, but that just goes to show you that how much. There's so much need out there in the community. So I was kind of wondering like why the the vital homes, is that vital?
Vital housing.
Vital housing. Why we couldn't put some of that unused funding towards the financial program rather than all of, you know, the 20,000 towards the vital housing?
Honestly, it doesn't matter what fiscal federal year it comes from. It's got to do with how much allocation you have and the year you're spending it in.
Okay.
So
okay.
I could get into the detailed, like, okay, calculations that have to be done, okay, but it all has to do with, it can only be, it's a percentage of what your allocation is for the year that you spend it in.
Okay. So, yeah. Okay, so we can, like, so right now we're prevented from providing any more funding to Hopeling for this, for of those unused funds, we can't spend anymore. Okay, all right, thank you. So that.
Well, I'm one of those people who's the the letter of the law.
Yeah.
In theory, we could allocate those funds this year, some of those funds this year.
Yeah. Without breaking the law? Or the rules or the regulations?
Without breaking the laws. Okay. It is, I'm just thinking we just got our contract for this year. Is that correct?
Right.
And yeah.
It would require an amendment to the comprehensive plan that the county has put
okay.
forward. So, it
so we may be time barred from
okay.
that,
okay.
just in the fact that it's, what is it, 27th
okay.
of October?
Okay.
So I'm just telling you from a pure finance, and we know the feds are not open right now.
From an administrative perspective, that would be just like
a challenge.
It would be
yes.
a nightmare. Okay, totally
correct.
Get that. Okay,
correct.
That's very
yeah,
helpful.
I just want to make sure I'm completely transparent.
Totally get it. Okay, thank you. Thank
yeah.
you. That's really helpful.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just a little disappointed that program that's only able to help 4 to 5 people a month, mm-hmm. you know, when they've got 150 to 200 people asking for help. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, so many people who just aren't getting that help. So that's why I was kind of hoping that we could have some of that money towards that program, but I get it why that can't happen. So so that's kind of the reasons why I'm not in favor of option one. I would be in favor of option two. I think that option two does provide enough money. It does provide money for the minor home program because I think it's a great program. When I was a case manager, social worker, I mm-hmm. totally used it. And folks who really,
as was mentioned, theirs for cheaper since they. So I mean, it's present. Or I would like to mention that we consider it sort of a financial assistance program because it is paying for something that's needed in a home, and
right.
they can still remain to pay their rent, their other utilities, and they're not then turning to HopeLink when they can't, when the heat gets turned off.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's like I said, the need is far outstrips
yes,
our resources to help folks.
Yeah.
So that, but that's why I still think, like, you know, that the financial assistance can be such a valuable kind of asset for our residents in Shoreline. So that's why I'd be more in favor of option two, and will not be voting for option one. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Scully.
Can you go back one slide? So my understanding between option one and option two is that there's a $10,000 delta in minor home repair. It's a substantial amount of money under either one, but with option one, you get $10,000 more in 2025 and additional $10,000 more in 2026.
Right.
And my question is that seems to be not a big difference, and I'm questioning whether that $10,000 is the difference between being able to fulfill all requests for services and maybe not. So I just like some support for the concept expressed in the first two bullet points there, that if we pick option two, then we may not be able to fulfill all requests for services. If we pick option one, we can.
Well, we've had, when were services stopped? Early September?
They were paused in August due to some programmatic things, and then because they've already billed out their contract, so they were able to serve some clients in September. But due to the uncertainty.
Can you speak closer to the microphone?
Due to the uncertainty about CDBG funding with this process, they've suspended services through the month of October. So now we're now just looking at scheduling clients who were scheduled for October into November and December. So there's this time that hasn't been able to be filled.
I fully understand that. My question is different. My question is, does the extra $10,000 make the difference this slide claims it does? Whereas with that extra $10,000, then we can do everything we want, versus without it, we may have to pause services again. Is that really true?
Well, we don't know how many requests will come in, but they would predict that more money will allow them to serve more clients. So
I just really caution you about making statements like this because you don't know, right? I mean, it's where we put 10,000. It's not that if we pick option two, we are undermining minor home repair. We're just prioritizing some other program. So this kind of slide irritates me. But moving on from that, I don't have a huge dog in this fight. My understanding is we need a motion to decide, right?
We have, well, the motion on the table right now
is one.
Is, yes.
Okay, all right. So if someone wants to amend it to go with option two, they would need to move to amend.
That is correct. So I support option one. And it's not because of the reasons that Councilmember Ramsdell has been talking about, because the needs are great. We do have, I mean, HopeLink is a fantastic organization and is supporting a whole lot of Shoreline residents. And I think that we have the opportunity to do more. I do, on balance, though, I think that because of the restrictions within the CDBG funding, that it's often easier to use our general funds to make an additional ask and provide additional funding to HopeLink rather than using these specific funds which have a whole bunch of restrictions on them. And so I will be, and I think there's, I will be supporting an amendment to the mid-buy to add additional funds to HopeLink to serve residents and keep people, I mean, however it's broken up between utility assistance and rental assistance because they did end in, you said August?
June.
I mean, that's a big problem. So however, I mean, whatever that ask is, I mean, I don't have a, whether it's for utility assistance, whether it's for rental assistance, whether it's, we give discretion to staff to say to HopeLink, use it in these two buckets. Whatever it is, I think that we have an opportunity to do more through the mid-buy rather than through the CDBG funds. Deputy Mayor Mark.
If I could just ask a clarifying question. You indicated that option two would involve more complicated administration. Mm-hmm. Could you describe that a little bit and money or time associated with that?
I'm trying to think how far back I want to, how wide I want to go in my explanation. I'll keep it as simple as I can. So for a majority, if not all, but a majority of the funds that we do have for this rental assistance, et cetera, are in one large contract with HopeLink. And they have one contract with the city of Kirkland because we do pooled funding, and they have one invoice every quarter or month. And they ask for all of the same identifying factors, demographics, all of the thing on the same reports. So there's that simplicity to it that they've really worked around their program. HopeLink would absolutely be capable of meeting the requirements easily. I think we mentioned last time Shoreline provided them well over $350,000 in CDBG funds during the pandemic for rental assistance. Those reports were perfect, great, passed all the muster, audits, et cetera. It makes a lot more sense when you're adding a secondary layer of reporting on top when you have that much funding involved. Again, they would be likely happily to take it. It does add another layer both up to King County to contract for the funds with us and then for us to contract them separately with HopeLink.
And just to add, with the King County administration, they would have to amend their comprehensive plan that includes, because our funding comes through mm-hmm. King County, the plan that we have currently for 2025 does not include funding for public service, if that makes sense. So that's another piece that just is very time consuming.
Yeah, it would be easier with the 2026 dollars. And again, we would do it. It just, it's much more simple with general funds or other dollars.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Councilmember Adamasi.
Hi, I just had some questions about the Vital Housing and how much sway we have on their chosen AMI of 60%. I ran some quick calculations mm-hmm. here. Mm-hmm. So
King County AMI is $157,000 a year. Mm-hmm. 60% of that is a little over $94,000 a year. So they would be paying in those units a third of their income at $2,600 a month.
For a family of four, I believe. Is that?
I didn't break it down by the family of four.
The 160, yeah, that's a family of four. So if they have less, their AMI would be less as well.
If we reduce that to 50% AMI, potentially, I mean, just to get the word out there.
Yeah, for $35,000 or $36,000, I would not feel comfortable from a in a $20 million project to request that of them. We could, and we have asked them, and it really doesn't pencil out at 50% for them either, so they would walk away at that level.
So, okay, so people need to know it's over $2,600 a unit. Thank
four,
you.
Yeah, family of four, yeah.
Any further discussion? Okay, the motion on the table is on the screen, which is also known as option one, as described in the staff report and presentation. Will the clerk please conduct a vote?
Deputy Mayor Mork.
Aye.
Councilmember Ramsdell.
Nay.
Councilmember Scully.
Aye.
Councilmember Automasu.
Aye.
Mayor Roberts.
Aye. That motion passes 4-1. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is a discussion of the 2026 state legislative priorities, and there is a staff report. Welcome.
Good evening, Council. My name is Jim Hammond. I'm with the City Manager's Office. I manage the intergovernmental relations for the City of Shoreline. I'm joined tonight by Deborah Munguia. Deborah, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Deborah Munguia. I have been working with the City of Shoreline since 2018 doing legislative relations.
And Deborah is an invaluable contact for us in Olympia. She's based down there, and then during session, it gives us ready access to conversations we need to have with our legislative delegation and other members of the state legislature. We're here tonight to talk about the 2026 legislative agenda for the upcoming legislative session. Tonight is discussion, and then adoption would follow in due course. For general knowledge, for anyone who might be listening or watching this discussion, what is a legislative agenda and why do we need one? The legislative environment is fluid, and there's usually surprises. There's certainly unanticipated, but also sometimes horribly anticipated things that you know are on the horizon. But how they're going to be dealt with and what's going to happen when can be very unpredictable. An agenda gives us a framework and sort of a set of policy goals, which are the province of the council to guide staff through those kind of turbulent waters. It gives us priorities and focus. It enables us to identify where to put our time and energy. And we also work very closely with advocacy groups, of which the City of Shoreline is a part, notably the Sound Cities Association and the Association of Washington Cities. Deborah, why don't you talk about the 2026 session overview?
Okay, thanks, Jim. So in 2026, the session starts on January 12th. It's a short session. In even years, we have short sessions. Odd years, we have long sessions. And it is could last up to 60 days. Hopefully, won't go into a special session. So it has an expected end date of March 12th. Democrats will be... Oh, thank you. Is that better? Thank you.
Yes.
Democrats will be keeping their majorities in both the House and the Senate. There are 9 legislative seats that will be on the ballot, and 3 of them are unopposed. Probably the most interesting one on that is the state Senate race in the 26th legislative district. We'll see what happens with that. So it's going to be a short session, but it's going to have a really fast pace. It's going to be very hectic. it has been described as it's a, you have less amount of time to do the same work that you would do in a long session. So it's going to be very intense. And it's going to be a very difficult session. You've all been hearing about the state revenue picture. And so the governor actually recently said that the latest forecast shows a shortfall of close to $2 billion for the next legislative session. I think that's based on current biennium, next biennium, you know, the 4 years, that kind of thing. But then the federal uncertainty is going to be a really big issue during the session as well. The Senate Ways and Means Committee just had a work session a week or so ago, and they were going over what the impacts could be of H.R. 1 to Medicaid and to the SNAP program, billions of dollars. 620,000 Washingtonians could be impacted. So we're going to have to wait and see what happens there. So we're already going into it with revenue down and with potential, really big potential impacts to our citizens. And so we'll have to see what happens. The director of OFM gave a presentation recently on the state of the budget and where things are at. And state agencies were told to prepare for significant reductions. And the governor has indicated that those are probably going to be in his proposed budget that he releases in December, which he will release after the November revenue forecast. So it's going to be a tough session. The other thing that happens in December is that bills can be pre-filed. So, and all the bills that did not pass last session will automatically be reintroduced next session. So they'll be out there also. And then the House and the Senate will be in Olympia the first week of December for committee days, and we'll be getting more information from them. And then after the February revenue forecast is released, the House and the Senate will be releasing their proposed budgets. So
a lot of stuff in a very compressed amount of time. In that environment, we want to try to be as present as we can with our legislators on both our broad policy goals and then some of our specific priorities. We've identified in this year's draft agenda a familiar visibility of the 175th corridor. This is a project that is essential in the heart of Shoreline. It's facing challenges now even with delivering the phase one of that project along the bog and doing the seismic retrofits. It's just not clear what the funding future for that is. But staff continues to move forward on that, and I think Public Works is doing a great job. But at some point in the future, we would expect that there would be another statewide transportation package. Those come together periodically. The last time one did, we were able to secure funding for the 148th Street non-motorized bridge. So the thought would be, as we continue to educate our delegation and other key members of the transportation world in the state legislature, we would want them to understand the value of the 175th corridor as a major freight route, as a major connector east-west in the northern part of King County, as obviously a road that serves an elementary school and needs safe access there as well. And for all of these reasons, it's a great project, one that we're proud to advocate for, and we want to lay the groundwork for an eventual future funding conversation in Olympia. And then the second thing is a local community project request, and these are projects that get sponsored by the local delegation. So Senator Solomon, Representative Ryu, Representative Davis of the 32nd District would be the folks who would provide leadership within the capital budget development process for investment. And this year has been very exciting, and we've actually received an unprecedented amount of public interest and public support for seeking funding for capital improvements to the area at 10th and 185th by the traffic circle there in Rotary Park and the old boarded up building that's a saw shop, just to create something that could be fun and different and allow food trucks and maybe art venues to set up shop there on a regular and predictable basis. The capital investments would facilitate that. It brings to this community the kinds of things we hear regularly from residents as them wanting it on our biannual resident surveys, and it's been supported by the kinds of feedback we're already receiving on our federal or our state agenda here this evening. Beyond those specific requests, we always want to talk about the key policy issues that really reflect the value of the city and the value of this council. Many of them are evergreens and are familiar ones from prior years, but there are always new ones as well. We'll just go through these briefly for you just to give you that familiarity. They're discussed, of course, at greater length in the staff report. Deborah, why don't you talk about the first couple?
Okay, so local transportation funding is always an ongoing issue. So is state transportation funding. While the operating revenues are considerably down, the state transportation revenues are they're up a little bit. But if you take a look at the different funding sources within that, that's because of the Climate Commitment Act, which actually got a positive forecast in terms of revenues coming in, more than what they were expecting. But also, in the last session, the legislature passed a law that would permanently transfer 0.1% of the state sales tax over to the transportation budget. So those are the two main reasons that the transportation revenues don't look as bad as operating. So if those things continue to be that way, then that's a little bit better. However, the State Transportation Commission recently came out and said that they need $8 billion over the next decade just to do preservation and maintenance for state highways and bridges and things like that. So although the revenues for transportation are not as bad as operating in the forecast, the need is huge in terms of preservation and maintenance. And a lot of money went towards funding projects, but not as much as was needed for preservation and maintenance. And they are saying that they are basically deteriorating faster. The infrastructure is deteriorating faster than it can be repaired. And that we are in the early stages of a critical failure for lack of funding at the state level. So the 80% of cities have said that their aging infrastructure systems need significant repairs, and 60% of the cities say that they need state assistance. So that's going to continue to be something that's going to be really difficult. But we're going to keep working on that.
Yeah. And then indigent defense costs are another new driver, one that the state has, the state Supreme Court has generated through reduced caseloads for public defenders in order to provide indigent defendants with more effective assistance of counsel.
And cities have said that with those new standards that their costs could triple over the next decade. And a little bit of background, you may already know this, on the indigent defense issue, that in 2023, some counties led by the Association of Counties sued the state on the state's funding system for indigent defense. And then in March of 2024, a trial court said that they didn't have standing, but then in July of this year, the State Court of Appeals reversed the trial court's ruling on that. And so the Attorney General's office, so basically they said that the counties do have standing on this issue. And so the Attorney General's office has submitted a petition for review to the State Supreme Court, asking them to look at this and to rule that the counties do not have standing on this issue. So the Supreme Court hasn't decided yet what they're going to do, but in the past, they usually decide within 3 or 4 months after they get a petition for review whether or not they're going to review it. And if they do take it up, it could take another 12 to 18 months. So probably not for the 2026 legislative session. There might not be a big financial impact. For instance, if the court said, no, the state does have to pay more money for indigent defense, but that could be something for 2027.
Thank you. Just to run through many of the remaining policy issues, these tend to be, for the most part, familiar ones that have been on prior agendas. Our land use planning and permitting has been a real topic of focus for the legislature in past years, a commitment to trying to increase the housing supply in our state. Really an important thing. We're very fortunate to have a senator who was a former city council member here and who stays in close touch with us and with our planning team to really understand and learn what we're doing here and use that to inform his work in Olympia as he seeks to continue to fine-tune how the state would guide local governments in that realm. And so we stay close on that issue, and we have a great team in the planning on the planning side that brings a lot of great knowledge and intelligence to it. Climate change remains a crisis regardless of what you might see at the federal level. Greenhouse gas is still very serious, and we monitor the legislation there. It is an easy yes given council direction to support measures that address those challenges. Behavioral health, fish passages, and overall city fiscal stability are ones that are well familiar to this council. And then the other new one for this year has to do with wastewater and the state nutrient general permit. You may notice it's fairly in unclear because there's not a specific ask. We don't know yet what it will be, but as members of this council have shared in the past, the question of how the wastewater costs, wastewater treatment costs, and rates for our ratepayers here in the city of Shoreline are under pressure, upward pressure, and there are things including new potential environmental regulation that need to be thoughtfully considered as the state wrestles with those issues, because nobody disagrees on the health of the sound, but the question is what's the best way to use limited resources to secure that future. So with that, we can move on to any questions from the dais or any discussion you wish to have.
Councilmember Scully.
So thank you, and thank you for this. I want to focus on the policy issues. I think the three of us have actually been doing this about the same amount of time, and at this point, I totally trust both of you to understand our general philosophy and to adapt to the changing environment, you know, in exactly the accord I think we all would want you to. I don't love the way the policy issues are framed because I don't think it really provides anybody any guidance. I don't want to change this year, but I think for the future, we should get in the habit of having it more action focused. What are you actually going to try and accomplish down there? Right? We all agree behavioral health is an issue, no question, but what are we trying to get? Are we trying to get increased state funding for crisis centers? What's not even the ask, but what's the goal? Because if all we're doing is thinking about behavioral health, that's the recipe for doing nothing, right? Or being a follower onto other people's ideas. Likewise, fish passages and culverts, super important to me personally. What's Shoreline's interest in that? And that's a question I actually would like answered. Some of this stuff with your explanation was great, like the wastewater and state nutrient general permit. If we can turn that into a here's what we want to get done, then I think for the future that would be beneficial. On the fish passages, though, what's the city take on that beyond it's important to everybody?
Well, I think that it's the general principle, and I will confess I don't have a project level of knowledge here. But there are several different stream systems that we do work in as a city, some of them in partnership with, say, Lake Forest Park. I think that's Lion Creek over in the Ballinger area. And you know, what those creeks struggle with are a series of blockages, some of which are state-owned, some of which are locally owned, okay. And some of which are privately owned.
I got it. Thank you. Right. So there is, I will tell you, this is something I've been deeply embedded in for a while.
Yeah.
We don't really have a lot of those issues within city limits. Mm-hmm. Lion feeds Ballinger and then Lake Washington, so it doesn't really, it's not a Shoreline thing. And we removed that dam, but there's a whole bunch of blockages downstream. And so we don't really have a dog in that fight or a fish in that fight. Specifically beyond it's a general interest. And so I wouldn't want us to see us pushing for policy changes that aren't going to affect Shoreline when we could be focusing our powder elsewhere.
Okay. And I appreciate that. That kind of discussion here helps prioritize as we go forward. I would say the policy is a guideline, and then conversation with you as policy leaders is equally important. So thank you.
And I can share that there are discussions, mediations actually going on right now between the tribes and the governor's office on the culverts and in the injunction area. The state doesn't have the money, they don't have the resources, they're not going to get it done in time. But there is a push to have a broader conversation about city-owned, local-owned culverts and Fish Passage. And for instance, Badger Creek, I think it was, there was a slope erosion, had to get an emergency HPA, and because work had to be done, the state law is that the requirements were that taking out the two 18-inch culverts and putting in like an 8-by-12-foot box culvert, which is over $1 million or $2 million, something like that, with no benefit to Fish. And whereas, you know, if there was more flexibility in the state law, then maybe that money could be put to where it would benefit Fish. And, you know, so those conversations are what's happening now.
And that just illustrates my point. Super important to me personally. Again, I don't think city legislative resources are best having you into meetings about Badger Creek, which isn't here, right?
No. I hear what you're saying.
Any further discussion? I'll just say one comment, and then when we talked with a couple of us talked with Representative Ryu the other day, she was pessimistic about a capital budget or any dollars for capital budget. So, but assuming that there is a capital budget, I mean, I do support, you know, the efforts to sort of vitalize Rotary Park, and I think that is a really good, exciting project that when you have the community involved, when you have legislators who are excited about it, it definitely is something we should continue to be excited about ourselves. I do recognize with that, I also don't want us to sort of lose sight of the fact that we have, we just adopted a ADA accessibility plan for our parks and park system. And I think all of us were very kind of disappointed that in terms of what we can do and the resources we can bear, it would be a multi-decade long project to meet all of those ADA requirements. But having I just want sort of continued visibility on that the state capital budget has done a lot already to fund restroom repairs and other things that would meet are part of our ADA accessibility plan. And I don't want to lose sight of those. They may not be as the most exciting projects, but they, for our users of our parks, they're really important projects. So I don't want to lose sight of those, and we should take the wins when we get them.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Any further discussions? Okay. Is it okay if this goes on consent when it comes back? All right. I see that, and I think that as time allows next year, I mean, to really sort of think about, as we think about our federal priorities and our state legislative priorities for not this year, but future years, the comments by Councilmember Scully are well taken. I mean, what are the benefits of sort of this visibility type of legislative priority versus a more action-oriented priority, I think is something we should consider.
Very good, and duly noted, and I appreciate the feedback.
Thank you. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.